Episode 7 of Top Turtle MMA is brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox. If you're a grappler, you're going to want to get yourself a toolbox. If you know a grappler, you might want to get him or her a toolbox. What's in the Grappler's Toolbox? So glad you asked. Battle Bomb to prevent against mat herpes. Rockin' Green Athletic Detergent to clean your gi and or submission grappling, rash guards, and shorts. And Tape Armor. Gumby, do you have a Grappler's Toolbox?
Obviously, I have a Grappler's Toolbox, and that comes with Sisu Mouthguards, which our show is also brought to you by. Sisu Mouthguards are the most breathable, lightweight mouthguards on the market.
Breathable, lightweight, on the market.
And we always make sure that when we're heading to open mat, which we're doing right after we leave here, we've got our Sisu Mouthguards in. That's SISUGuard.com. Head on over there, pick yourself up one.
So in summation, Episode 7 brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox and Sisu Mouthguards. All right, we are rolling. I am David Tremonti, your co-host. I am joined by Daniel Gumby Vreeland. This is Top Turtle MMA on MMAManifesto.com. You can reach us at Top Turtle MMA on the old Twitter, and you could email us at topturtlemma@gmail.com. How are you today, Gumby?
I'm excellent. And don't forget to follow us on any of the major podcast services we're on. We're on SoundCloud. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn. You can download us anywhere there. Follow us. And we're on a whole bunch of other ones, too. So make sure that you just pick the service that you like the best and click that follow button. Make sure you get us in your playlist every single week.
Gumby, what a weekend in the MMA world, huh?
What? It was loaded. I was actually shocked because, you know, obviously I knew the Freak Show Bellator fights were coming up. Obviously I knew UFC fights were coming up. But there was a lot of other MMA on this weekend, too, from like smaller promotions and stuff.
World Series, right?
Yeah. World Series was on, RFA was on. I feel like I'm forgetting one or two in
there.
What
was your match of the weekend?
Oh, match of the weekend.
Kimbo Slice versus Negative Dada 5000.
That was the most, and I don't take this statement lightly. I want to say this from a true standpoint. That was the most painful thing I've ever watched in the history of me being a fan of MMA. And I include Kimbo versus Houston Alexander
that
in that conversation.
Awful. What about there was a Gonzaga fight in there that was just horrific?
Oh, Gonzaga and Aronkin? Yeah. Is he Polish?
It was a Polish.
Yeah, right? Polish.
Either. It was an awful heavyweight fight.
That was bad, but that wasn't Dada 5000 versus
Kimbo Slice.
Kimbo Slice bad.
I mean, this is what's so bad about it, and if you didn't see it, be thankful, but Kimbo Slice...
Don't YouTube it, or find it. Don't find it.
Yeah, don't feed the beast and make Bellator think that people want to watch this, but it ended with a knockout in the third round, really by way of Kimbo's fist and also Dada Negative 5000's cardio.
Yeah,
I mean, the wind knocked him over.
It said
his own
wind. It said on numerous websites if you like followed the results online, which I actually had to do. I realized my cable provider canceled Spike off of my package. I either got to up my package or just live without Spike, which after that performance I might just do. So I was watching at a friend's house, and I was following along online too, and it said TKO punches / exhaustion
in professional MMA.
In professional, supposed to be high level MMA, you know, just terrible.
And then the main event was 51-year-old Ken Shamrock versus 48-year-old Hoyce Gracie. Just like the first fight where Ken Shamrock claimed he didn't tap, even though he tapped, he claims he got kneed in the balls, and you know he challenged the commission to overturn the win for Hoyce, who won via ground and pound.
I think he probably did get kneed in the balls. You know, I like watched the replay. It looks like he probably did. But you know what? Like, commissions miss that shit all the time. You know, I can't remember what it was, but there was a prelim fight a while ago where a referee thought a guy went out to a guillotine choke, and they still didn't overturn that one, even though the referee pried him off.
I remember that. That was down in Brazil,
I want to say it was in Australia.
Okay, yeah, it was a foreign card.
But it was the first prelim fight, and the ref, like, pried a guy off from a guillotine, and he was fine. He, like, had circled around to the appropriate side and felt fine. And, like, looked at him like, what the hell are you doing? And the commission still didn't overturn that. I can't imagine they're overturning this. And on top of that, too, like, again, if you watch the fights, you're probably upset. But it wasn't even a good fight before that. nor at any point in time did anybody feel like it was going to be a good fight. I personally, and I said this before to a couple of different people, you included, off the air, I think that while the ratings are going to come back amazing on this, I think it's going to kill Bellator. I think it did way more damage having amazing ratings than good, because what's going to happen is that these casual fans are going to tune in to watch this freak show fight, right? Because all their friends, all the hype, all that kind of stuff, they're going to tune in and they're going to think this is what Bellator is. Now, there are going to be good Bellator fights in the future. Benson Henderson fights soon. But are those casual MMA fans who think that this is what Bellator is going to tune into that now?
Of course not. No, the people who are tuning in are just the ones who go to World Star Hip Hop and just want to see the car crash mentality of it all. And, you know, maybe they'll come. Well, here's the thing. They might have burned a bridge with the Kimbo fights, because now the average fan might just say, God, this guy sucks. You can't even.
I don't think you can sell a Kimbo fight ever again if I was at Bellator. You know, like, he nearly lost to Ken Shamrock. Okay, let's start there. He should have been choked out by Ken Shamrock.
Right.
And he won this, like, kind of weird knockout comeback, and now he's got this like awful, you know, like, I guess it's a TKO win over a street fighter who was he 2-2
something,
or 2-0
like
or something,
and the fight itself was just painful for those first two rounds. I mean, McCarthy stood them up from
mount.
Kimbo having mount,
he got stood up from mount. When would you ever think that it was acceptable to stand somebody up for mount? But he stood him up for mount, and I was like, yes, thank you, because it was not good.
So I agree with you. I know what Bellator is doing with the freak fights, but, you know, they're not putting enough on the undercards or promoting the other young up-and-coming fighters. Not that they really have, like, a
perfect example of that, though, too, is that, like, okay, so Derek Campos fought Melvin Gillard. Melvin Gillard could sell you some tickets. Most people didn't know Melvin Gillard was on that card. And on top of that, Derek Campos, decent guy, fought for Bellator a bunch of times. He got a knockout win. He could have been being built up. You know, if you had, like, put some stock into Melvin Gillard and made people believe Melvin Gillard still had it, this Derek Campos guy would be a viable star that you could sell in the future. And, yeah, he's lost a couple here and there, but you would have something.
Yeah.
Instead, you built up nothing except for all of these schmucks who then shot themselves in the foot.
You know what it reminds me of? It's the general manager on a baseball, basketball, football team who knows his days are numbered, and he's just throwing big money around at free agents to try to get that championship in the next year or two, and not building up the farm system. And that kind of feels like what Scott Coker's doing here, because, you know, he's had the promotion under his wings now for a couple of years, and they haven't, like, who's a star that Bellator has created in the past couple of years?
I can't think of any. I mean, Michael Chandler, you could argue, was already built.
Right.
King Mo was already built when they brought him over.
These, quote, tentpole fights, what have you, the Kimbo fights, the freak show fights, should be used to highlight an up-and-coming fighter in the co-main every time. Instead, on Friday night, they gave us a horrific double co-main event. And I was thinking about it, too. Kimbo beat Ken Shamrock. Why does Kimbo have to be in the second fight from the top? How did Ken earn the right to be in the top? Okay, I get it. He's the bigger name, and him and Hoist is legendary, so to speak. But what's Bellator doing here? You know, so that, to me, says wins and losses don't even matter in Bellator. Kimbo beat Ken Shamrock.
They've done that before, though, too. They've had, I think it was when Kimbo fought Ken Shamrock, they had that main event, and the co-main event, I think, was their lightweight title or their featherweight title. And I was just like, how are you selling this fight over the featherweight title? Like, it should be a bonus fight to your featherweight title.
At UFC's biggest fights, the title is always the headliner.
It's always the headliner.
Has there ever, can we even think off the top of our heads right now, has there ever been a pay-per-view where the title fight was not the headliner?
No, I think he argued that once. Dana White argued that once. Because there was like a, I want to say some kind of legendary co-main event that people said should have been the main event. It might have even been over like a Rousey title fight before Rousey started selling immaculate numbers. I'll have to look it up. But somebody was
maybe
like,
Rousey
Carmouche
was the co-main and someone else was the main in that.
Or they thought that the other one should be the main. Maybe look up what the co-main event of that is.
That,
because I think people were complaining that the co-main event should have been the main event instead of Rousey Carmouche. And he was like, no, the title fight is always the main event because we value our champions no matter what weight class, no matter what sex. And that's the right answer.
Right.
That's what we should be answering every time, right?
So that was Friday night, just ridiculous. What were your takeaways from UFC on Sunday night?
I mean, my takeaways were not a whole lot that you could say.
Lyoto Machida, Dan Henderson. Sorry to cut you off.
Yes,
Lyoto Machida,
yes.
Dan Henderson.
And that's
the
one that everybody was like, Machida Henderson should be the main event. And they were like, no,
our
champion is.
Right. Okay. So sorry, I cut you off there.
No, thanks for looking that up. Not a lot, that plays into any title picture. Cause I think anybody who is going to make a play in the title picture did exactly what they were expected or fought a fill-in fight. Like, think about, you know, Cody Garbrandt probably getting close to title talk. He fought a guy on short notice who had way less, well, not way less fights than him, a couple less fights than him, and did exactly what he's supposed to.
Knocked him the F out.
Yep. You know, Cerrone stepped up, fought a guy who was also stepping up in weight, which people forget. And you know, he submitted him. I said it on the show before. He's a better submission guy than Oliveira is. Oliveira's going to get too greedy, try to grapple with him, and get submitted.
You called that completely. You had a really good week last week from the predictions. If you go back to episode 6 and listen to Gumby's predictions, I think you were pretty much...
I fucked up Riggs pretty hard.
Yeah, well, that's tough. Riggs broke his forearm.
Yeah, Riggs set me back a little bit. And I think I got Shane Campbell, James Krause wrong, but like pretty decent on the...
But there were like 13 fights on that card, so you were 11 of 13, and you predicted the finish for Cerrone.
Yeah, I think I was pretty close to
number. But regardless, yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, was I didn't watch the post-fight. Did anyone talk about the fact that was kind of a weak-ish triangle? Like, he didn't even get the arm across.
Yeah, I think we got tweets from Dana White saying he wasn't happy about how quick the tap was.
Was he not happy with the tap? I thought he was not happy with the ref. I'll look that up.
Well, the ref didn't do it. I mean, like, Oliveira tapped. I mean, if you look, his hand comes up. He taps Cerrone on the chest. Cerrone looks at the ref like, are you seeing this shit? Because the ref didn't see that shit. And, you know, we went from there.
Yeah. And then actually, you know what I did enjoy about the night? Cause it was kind of an underwhelming fight card. I think that's fair to say. I like some of the undercard, the fight pass fights more than anything, you know, like for a heavyweight fight, I thought those two guys, they got bloody. They were throwing punches.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't an awful heavyweight fight.
Abdurakhimov and Hamilton.
Yeah. Oh, and I have to take one on the chin for last week. I am an idiot. I looked at something very quickly. I thought Hamilton was also a professional wrestler because I've been going back and watching Pride from the early days, and it got me, like, I had this thing planted in my head, Inception style, Leonardo DiCaprio style, that pro wrestling and MMA come from some of the same roots, and we could talk about that on another show about Pride. And there's actually a professional wrestler, big black dude named Freight Train. So I'm
not Anthony Hamilton.
I looked at it so quick
when you said that. I was like, I don't think that shit's right. But, like, I wasn't going to be like, no, he's not, because I didn't know.
I messed that one up so bad. Anyway, so that was a good heavyweight fight. And then our girl,
Laura Murphy.
What an awesome performance.
Yeah.
Got the finish with maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes left.
No, it was five seconds
left. Sorry.
She did exactly what she said she was going to do, too. She was like, this is a fight of the night type performance you're going to see out of me. This girl is going to come forward and want to bang with me. Exactly what she said. And then she said, I need to go in there and get the finish. And she fought up until the last second to get that finish. Even though I thought she was winning the fight, she probably could have just stood there for 5 seconds and taken the decision. But she unloaded and picked up the finish. And you got to love that.
As far as where some of these fighters go, do you have any quick reactions as far as, like, Cerrone?
I would love to see Cerrone. I thought about this while he was fighting. Albert Tumanov. On a freaking great win streak.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and a fun striker. He says he's the best striker at 170. Put him in there with Cerrone. If Cerrone wants to hang out at 170, let him hang out there. And if he doesn't want to hang out at 170 anymore, I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Dustin Poirier.
Send him down
and let him fight Dustin Poirier. That'd be a fun one. And for other ones, I mean, set Garbrandt back up with Lineker. I mean, Derek Brunson has got to start getting talks for, you know, like a real 185 top fiver. I mean, he could fight, I don't know, say the winner of Robert Whittaker versus Rafael Nadal. He could fight the winner at Anderson Silva and Bisping, really, at this point. He's got such a nice little win streak. So there's a lot of matchmaking you could do there. But nothing that seemed to, like...
It was a very underwhelming card. You know, nothing really got defined in any division. It's like Garbrandt picked up another win.
He was supposed to get.
Yeah, that he was supposed to get. You know, I like seeing our guy Bang Boshe get his win.
Cause we slaughtered his name on the show last week, but man, he made you remember his name with that kick.
And did we ever find out he, after the kick and the TKO, did he ever say, he said on the post-fight, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, we still haven't found out who he's coming for. I did some digging, but I couldn't figure out who he's coming for.
Interview him and ask. But yeah, like I was trying to say, is just underwhelming card. Not a lot was advanced for any one fighter or division. People who were supposed to win won, and that's kind of the way it goes. And we'll just wrap on this, Gumby. Breaking news. Massive rating success for Bellator on Friday night. Average of 2.1 million tuned in for the main event. I'm going quick off the top of my head, but I think other than the Connor Dennis Seaver fight, and now Spike TV's in more homes than Fox Sports, but that's a way better rating than anything that ever gets pulled in on Fox Sports for the UFC.
But again, I'm going to go on record saying, I'm saying long run, Bellator is going to look back at that 2.1 million people and realize it was a mistake.
Yeah.
And it's going to do more harm than good.
And the final rating, The peak is unknown, so when Kimbo was fighting Dada, for all we know, 4 million people tuned in. It was a 2.1 million average through the whole card itself, but the overall rating was a 1.9, so there you go. Wow. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to track. Do people come back for the next Kimbo fight? Because I think they're doing a lot of damage, like you said. And with that said, we will transition to Gumby catching up with New Zealand-born, but Australia-trained, and where he lives now, Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, and he's about to face off upcoming against Rafael Natal in a really fun matchup. He's a guy that a lot of people are sleeping on in that middleweight division. You know, we talked about Brunson a second ago, but he's definitely up there too, and it's about time people start to notice him.
All right. This interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in beautiful Amherst, Massachusetts. Dave Roy, black belt, Kirik Jeunesse, owner and all-around most knowledgeable guy about MMA.
MMA guru, you can call him.
MMA guru is what you would call him, are the two coaches. Class is 6 days a week. I train there. Gumby trains there. It's basically like my Cheers. I walk in, everyone says, Dave! Gumby walks in, everyone says, Gumby!
But yeah, they really do love you there, no matter what. So if you are looking for a place to train in the Western Mass area, I highly suggest stopping by. You'll instantly see the environment there. It's a great place to train, and we pick up a lot quickly there. So head on over and check it out.
All right. This interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland with Top Turtle MMA. I'm here with Robert Whittaker, who fights at UFC 197 April 23rd against Rafael Natal. Robert, we'll get right into it here. You had two very close fights at welterweight, but unfortunately had lost two in a row. Now you're undefeated as a middleweight. What's the difference between you as a fighter at 185 versus 170?
I think the biggest thing is the weight cut and the training prep leading into it due to the weight cut. The whole time as a welterweight, I was trying to lose the weight for the fight and just trying to get my weight down. I was worrying about burning calories more than learning skill sets and just feeling good. And, you know, moving up the middleweight, I just worry about my performance. I worry about the output in training, and I just feel like a more complete fighter.
And that's it's certainly shown. So your last loss was to Stephen Thompson down there at welterweight. Did you get a chance to see his last victory? And if so, what were your thoughts on that win?
Yeah, I didn't manage to watch his last victory. And what can I say? He's a wizard. He's an exceptional fighter with a really unique style. And it's awesome watching him do his work.
Yeah, it certainly makes that loss a little bit easier. So let's move on to your next fight. So they recently announced you'll be fighting Rafael Natal at 197. After beating somebody like Uriah Hall, who is actually ranked higher than Natal, did you still see this as a step forward or more of a step backwards or keeping ground?
It's definitely a step forward, you know. The ranks have never really played a role in my fight decision. My thought process is going into who I'm going to fight and when I'm going to take a fight. I'm just there to fight, and you know, I'm thankful for the UFC to line me up a fight. Rafael is no joke. You know, he's a serious fighter, and yeah, I'm gonna take this fight with all the respect he deserves.
Yeah, and so you mentioned a little bit about Natal being a very serious fighter. What threats does he pose that maybe were a little bit tougher than Uriah Hall or a little bit different than Uriah Hall?
Rafael is a tough fighter. You know, he fought the best of them, and he persists, and he's determined, and he just keeps driving, keeps going forward. And you know, I think that sort of mentality and that sort of fight style can beat a lot of dudes. You know, and I've got to go into the fight with the, you know, knowing that he can do that and giving you the respect it deserves.
Yep, and so what are you doing to get ready for that forward-style pressure that you were talking about that Natal brings? Anything changed up in the training? Anything that you're doing as far as training partners?
Not necessarily. I have a lot of training partners with a lot of different skill sets at the moment, and I'm just trying to perfect my own game plan rather than trying to change my game plan to adapt to his. I think if I go in there with my own skill sets and my current game plan and my usual fight game, I think he'll find it very hard to cope with.
So you said that rankings don't really matter all that much to you, but you are ranked number 8 in the middleweight rankings. The only person under 30 ranked in the top 8. You got to imagine that with a win over Natal, you're definitely looking at like a top 5 big name opponent. I mean, you're only ranked 1 behind Anderson Silva and 2 behind Michael Bisping. Is there somebody who you're looking forward to facing in the top of that division that you've got your eye on?
I've got my eye on everyone. If you're in my division and you're in the top 10, my eye's on you. That's just the game, you know. I'm here to fight the best in the world, and you know, the best in the world are in the top 10, and that's where I've got to go to hunt.
So with all of those guys being in the top 10 and so razor close to you, have you been watching the top of the division, kind of like knowing that these guys are, you know, next on your plate or short close to it?
You know, that's a funny thing. I don't particularly watch a lot of fights, to be honest. I don't know if it's just me, but if there's a big fight on, like a huge fight card, and the middleweights happen to be fighting at the same time, or it's like a title fight, such as the Weidman-Rockhold fight, that was amazing to watch. I really don't watch a lot of fighting, and I just kind of, you know, keep in touch. People tell me what happens in the division, and I just go out there with no expectations and just let my hands go.
So you said if it's a big fight being headlined by middleweights, you tune in. Will you be tuning in this upcoming weekend when Bisping fights Silva?
Definitely. You know, I'm a huge fan of both of them, really, and I'm very excited to see how this plays out.
Switching topics just a little bit more back to your fight. So you were born in New Zealand. You're training in Australia. What does it mean that the UFC keeps lining up home fights for you, and how helpful is that as far as your training goes?
I think it's a great advantage. But that's not to say I haven't fought overseas. My first half of the UFC career was overseas. But the fact that I've been able to fight locally for such a long while, it's been a great help. You know, I'm not having to do those big fights, because I don't know if you know this, but Australia is a fair way off.
Yeah.
So not having to make that big flight changes a few things, but I'm looking forward to fighting in Vegas. I think it's time to get out there again and spread my wings a bit and to show the rest of the world who I am.
And you think with a win over Natal, Vegas is calling your name?
100%. I think it's not going to be just the win. I think it's going to be the way I'm going to win, and I'm really looking forward to putting on a dominant performance.
So you said the way you're going to win. You know, as an interviewer, we've got to ask: do you got a prediction for what's going to happen come April 23rd?
Yeah, I think Rafael's going to be a tough guy. I think he's going to really come out there and he's going to give me his best A game. But I have no doubt in my mind that I will finish him. It's just a matter of when.
Is there any other shout-out you would like to give to maybe your training partners, some sponsors who helped you along, or anybody in particular?
Just a huge shout-out to my coaching staff, to Muscle Mills Direct, and then to my management groups, Smeaton Grain Sports. It's those guys keep me in the game. You know, they keep me afloat while training's hard, and it's really good to just be able to focus on the training and not have to worry about everything else on the side.
And they've certainly been great setting us up with an interview and helping us up with the time zone differences. So we know you got training coming up in a little bit. We want to thank you for taking the time to sit and talk with us. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so there you have it, Robert Whittaker. Exciting young fighter. You know, I like that he's one of those guys that he moved up in weight and has now found success.
Yeah, you're seeing that more and more, too. You know, who knows? Maybe this is the key for Donald Cerrone or, you know, somebody like that.
But, or maybe Conor McGregor.
Or Conor McGregor.
Not that he didn't have success at 145.
Yeah, who knows? But I think with this ban on the IVs, people more moving up in weight, and it tends to do more good than bad, I think. Interesting that it's working that way. Really ambitious young guy. You know, one of the only ranked middleweights under 30. I like that he wanted to go fight in Vegas. He's getting a little tired of the hometown fights. He's ready for the bright lights.
So it's a perfect segue because we're going to talk about Bisping versus Silva this coming Saturday. And he mentioned both guys.
Yeah, and he's ready to fight whatever one. Although he's good about not calling people out. He's one of those humble guys.
The thing is like, you know, the winner of Bisping Silva is probably going to put themselves in line for a title shot because, you know, you think of what's going on with the old Romero and the PEDs, who knows? And then Sousa, kind of an underwhelming performance, even though we both thought he won that fight against Romero. But you have to figure that a Silva versus, let's say, Rockhold fight after Rockhold defends against Weidman, that's a money fight if Silva wins this weekend.
I would agree with that up until, to a point. I think the method that this ends is the most important. If Anderson wins like he did against Nick Diaz, I don't think
Five-round decision takes 3 out of 5 rounds.
Yeah, I don't think that fight sells as well as people think it does. I think his name value holds a little bit less water than it used to. And you forget Jacare is fighting Vitor Belfort coming up soon. You know, if you mean to tell me that if Jacare came out and just flatlined Vitor Belfort,
yeah, that's a good
and
point.
Anderson Silva put together a ho-hum performance, that you wouldn't be yelling for Jacare. Jacare's only loss in the last however many years is that cheesy loss to a roided-up Yoel Romero. You know, like, I think if he goes and flatlines Belfort, I think it's got to be him next.
And I guess it's also worth noting, too, that Rockhold just had an easy day at the office against Bisping, if Bisping were to win. So, you know, remaking that fight, Bisping would probably have to go beat a Jacare.
Yeah,
or
I would say it's hard to sell Bisping, but I will also say, from Bisping's standpoint, Bisping was, in his interviews recently, is talking like this win should get him the title shot.
Mm.
Yeah, 100%. He feels he's been around in the division long enough. He's been, a top 5 or top 10 or constantly.
He's coming off a win over CB Dalloway and Talis Latis. I mean,
yeah. I agree. I don't see it. In addition, so this will kick off the breakdown of tonight. I don't think he's going to win anyway. You know, I think, you know, even having this discussion about whether or not he's going to get a title shot is a little bit fruitless because I think that this is Anderson Silva's fight. For a lot of people, like I said, have written off Anderson Silva. He had that Nick Diaz performance. Before that, he had back-to-back losses against Chris Weidman. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, like, oh, the killer Anderson Silva is gone. Let's think for a moment, okay? When Anderson Silva was the killer he was, think back to it, get yourself in the mindset.
Sure. 2 years ago, before July of 2013, he'd come off the Bonner just destruction.
Yeah, and remember what a killer he was and how everybody thought they couldn't touch him. Now, he got touched by Chris Weidman in that first fight. Everybody knows he was clowning, right?
Mm-hmm. I have to say, psychologically speaking, was he clowning because he kind of felt like, oh, damn, this guy's for real?
Well, I mean, you could argue that, but in the same token, he clowned Damian Maia. Did you think he was thinking that then?
No.
Did you think he was thinking it against Tialis Latis or Patrick Cote?
Or Forrest Griffin.
Griffin. Or no, you know, that's just what he always does. And, you know, I think he finally got caught doing it. Do you 100% think Chris Weidman is a better fighter than him? You could probably argue it, but not 100%. You are not convinced in your head that Chris Weidman is better than him. And that second fight, you know, that's a freak accident. So, I mean, those
although
are
the, he did lose the first
round. He definitely lost the first round. Have we never seen him lose a round before?
Yeah.
You know, see Shail Sonnen for more info. I mean, like, you know, I still think he has the potential to be just as big of a killer as he was before. And that Nick Diaz fight doesn't convince me otherwise either, because he was just doing what Anderson Silva does. You know, the three names that I mentioned there, he clowned all of those guys and beat them too. And I think with a guy that pushes forward like Michael Bisping, this fight is tailor-made for Anderson Silva to land some kind of flashy shit. You know, I think he's going to land, you know, a head kick, knees in the clinch. You're going to see some vintage Anderson Silva, and you're going to see a freaking killer knockout.
All right. Well, he is the minus 300 favorite to Bisping, the plus 250 dog in most sports books. And, you know, speaking of the fact that Bisping beat Thales Leitas in the co-main event, you have Thales Leitas fighting Gegard Mousasi. Mousasi is coming off a very kind of crazy loss to Uriah Hall, that the spinning back kick.
Yeah.
After he was winning the first round.
He definitely was going to win that fight if he didn't just get hit with something freak.
And then before that, he beat Konstantin Filipou and Dan Henderson via KO. And then Thales Leitas coming off the Bisping loss. But before that, he had a win over Tim Bosch and Francis Carmona. You know, I think for me, these two guys are kind of middle of the pack middleweights. I don't see them ever cracking back in, if Mousasi even was there at one point, the top five. But regardless, where do you see this going?
You see, I disagree with that only because I really do believe Gegard Mousasi is better than we think he is. Think about, so you said crap loss to Uriah Hall. If you take that away, you turn that into, say a decision win. Wins against Uriah Hall, Dan Henderson, and Konstantin Filipou are very legitimate, and he had a decent performance before he got finished by Jacare. I mean, he's got a pretty decent resume. He's got some great wrestling, and he's known to let his hands go. I think this is a very bad fight for Thales Leitas, and I think it's because Leitas likes to grapple and isn't as good of a grappler as Mousasi is.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not as high on Mousasi as you are. If you want to make this sort of long-term bet, I don't think Mousasi will ever fight for the middleweight. No, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say he'd never fight for the title, but injuries can happen. Last-minute replacement, he's a big enough
name. Such a good fill-in guy, too. Yeah, he's a great fill-in guy. He sells well in Europe.
You're right. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is, no, I don't put any stock in, like, a Mousasi run to the title here. So.
No, and I wouldn't say that either, because I think that division is pretty stacked right now. It was, you know, was that my pick to the only division I want to watch? Yeah, that was my pick, the only division I want
to
watch.
If you had to go to a desert island, or you could only watch one weight class for the rest of your life,
I picked that. And I think there are so many people there that it would probably stop him from getting that title shot. But he is top five-ish good.
Yeah. He's like, to me, there's this draw. It's like you have Sousa, Weidman, Rockhold, Romero. Big drop. Now you're in the Mousasi world.
What about Anderson Kennedy in there? Do you want to put Anderson in there?
I don't know what Anderson is anymore, because he's 40, coming off a horrific freak injury where he took steroids and blamed it on penis pills. I don't know what Anderson Silva is anymore.
He's got a great grizzly white old man beard going on. Well, if you've seen pictures recently, it's freaking phenomenal.
That's kind of cool. It seems like, didn't Sam Jackson have like an awesome grizzly white?
Yeah, he's got the beard. Sam Jackson going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mousasi, minus 325 favorite. Leitas, plus 265 dog. But you're going Mousasi all day here.
Yeah. Easy two main event fights. Huge favorites. And I think rightfully so.
All right. Moving on, you have at the welterweight division, you have Tom Breeze versus, and I'm going to just mess up this name, so I apologize. I'm actually going to mess up a lot of names on this card. Kiete Nakamura. And Kiete Nakamura is coming off a submission win over Jang Lang Lee in September at UFC Japan, and he is on a two-fight win streak because he also beat Adriano Martins. On the other side of the coin, Tom Breeze is coming off two wins in a row. He beat Cal Pendred, and he beat Luis Dutra. How do you see this one playing out? Both by KO, by the way.
Yeah, and that's why Breeze is so late on this card, too. This is... this is Great Britain's next big hope, I think. So, you know, obviously the sun is setting on Michael Bisping and the chance of him being the first British champ here. I think they see Tom Breeze as like that legitimate prospect who can bring a title home. And I think he's got that potential depending on, you know, what he's doing right now. Two really good KOs against some pretty tough guys. And I think he just tacks on another one here pretty easy.
He is a minus 1,100 favorite in some sports books.
I'm surprised to hear it's that large, but I knew it was going to be big.
I mean, minus 750, like bookmaker, Bovada, he's minus 950, but at Five Dimes, he's minus 1,100. Pinnacle, minus 1,010.
For those of you, too, who are not familiar with odds, like a minus 950 means that if you bet $9.50 on the fight, you're going to win a dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably not worth your favorite money, but yeah, he's a huge favorite.
All right. So no reason to pick against Vegas here.
Not a chance.
And you see a knockout?
I'm going to say early knockout. I'm talking like 45 seconds.
All right. Moving on, bantamweight offering. You have Brad Pickett, who lost via a horrific, violent knee to the chin to Thomas Almeida at UFC 189. He's actually on a 3-fight losing streak, including losses to Chico Camus and Ian McCall by decision. He will be fighting Francisco Rivera, who's coming off a loss to John Lineker, and before that, a win against Alex Caceres. And before that, the Uriah Faber loss, which I think was the eye poke.
He tried to appeal it and get a rematch.
Yeah, so, you know, he's 1-2 in his last three fights, and actually, if you want to go back even further, he's 1-3 in his last four. How do you see this one playing out?
So I'm pretty sure, and I took a glance at the odds before, I'm pretty sure Pickett here is a dog, but I like him.
Pickett is a plus 180 dog, correct.
Almost 2-1 dog here. I like him for it, too. I think people have written him off that his career is kind of over, and I think, you know, you could possibly see win or lose here, him stop fighting. You might see a retirement speech. Mm-hmm. He's home in Great Britain, you know, a chance to kind of like retire in front of the hometown crowd. It wouldn't shock me, being what his career is lately. But I think that this is a good fight for him, too, because he can showcase his wrestling a little bit of it against Rivera. Rivera, a guy who likes to throw hands pretty often, but has some of his own wrestling. I just don't think it's as good as Pickett's. And I think in that sense, Pickett could be set up here to take like a gritty wrestle him out, maybe some ground and pound. He's great at keeping fights exciting even when he's wrestling. I think you're going to see a win here for Pickett at home.
All right. Well, that does it for the main card. And on the other side of our interview, we will come back with the rest of the card for this Fight Pass show. But that being said, I am excited to say that we got a chance, both of us got a chance to catch up with rising heavyweight. He's 1-1 in the UFC, Timothy Johnson.
Yeah, super funny guy. Just a funny, funny interview, like Sam Alvey style almost. So tune in. You're going to enjoy this one. This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Top Turtle MMA. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Tremonti, and we're here with Timothy Johnson, who fights Marcin Tybura April 10th at Fight Night 87 in Zagreb, Croatia. So, Tim, we'll get right into talking about that fight. So, you are fighting overseas in Croatia. It's, I believe, the first time the UFC's in Croatia. What are your thoughts on fighting overseas in a brand new market? Is that a new kind of thing for you?
I got asked that a couple times recently. I guess I haven't even put much thought into it. Been in a plane for, you know, 14 hours before. You know, I've made that trip on, you know, a couple times. I don't think it will affect me too much. I haven't really thought about it. It's just, you know, you show up, you fight, no matter where it's at.
That's true. Have you, like, located any place where you're planning on doing some, like, pre-training out there? Do you got a place where you're thinking about working out, or are we too far away for you to even start thinking about that?
I haven't even thought about that too much. Just kind of getting locked in here. You know, we're not even halfway through the camp yet. We're getting pretty much solid here. There, I think I'm only gonna go all out about a week beforehand. It's only like a 7-hour time difference, so I don't think a jet lag should be too much of an issue. So just kind of going by the same plan that we've always used.
You know, you're fighting Marcin Tybura, who, while not a lot of American fans know him, he's a big deal over in Europe. Fought for M1 Global for a while, which is, you know, one of the biggest promotions over there in Eastern Europe. Does it bother you going into a fight knowing that you're probably going to get boos and that you're not exactly the fan favorite as far as Europe is concerned?
No, not really. Boos are to be expected. That's just the way it is, I guess. It makes the atmosphere that much better, I guess. If you're kind of looked at as the Rockiest too. You know, they're European champ.
Yeah, you're gonna go take out the Russian, even though.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tybura, so what exactly do you know about him? Although, like I said, most American fans don't know too much about him. You're halfway through your fight camp. It's about the time to start looking at film and start breaking some things down. What do you know about your opponent, and what interesting challenges does he pose to you?
From what we know about him, but he doesn't seem like it's so much that he incorporates in his fight, which is kind of something that I noticed. He's a world-class grappler, but, you know, in his fighting, he doesn't really incorporate, it doesn't look like he utilizes it too much. He likes to get into that, those snap kicks and clinch and kind of a body lock takedown, which, you know, in my eyes, that's fine. That's where I like to be too. So, you know, that'll be kind of a chess match for both of us when we get into a body lock. But the thing that kind of just will always be on my mind is a grappling ability, not to get, suckered into some kind of like a heel hook or, you know, knee bar of some sort.
Kind of like Frank Mir, Brock Lesnar won when.
Yeah.
It's always interesting. I know heavyweights, it's tough to sometimes find training partners your size. You know, we were looking at your Twitter before the interview, and unless I read it wrong, were you training with Roy Nelson recently, or who are some of your regular training partners your size?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of January or about middle of January there, I went out there kind of a two birds, one stone type of deal. And, for Ranger Up and Article 15 Clothing had their movie premiere out there and stuff. So I got invited to that. So, you know, went out to Vegas for 4 or 5 days there and trained with Roy, and, you know, Roy's a super nice guy. One of the nicest people I think I've ever met. And we clicked pretty good out there. So actually, this coming up next week, I'm going to head out there again for a week and get a little bit more training with them and those guys out at Extreme Couture, just a new look. You know, there's nothing and more people that you're learning from, more things you see, and the better you are.
Yeah, he's a black belt too. I mean, phenomenal grappler.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. People really honestly forget that all the time. They think of Roy, and instantly they just think of that big right hand. I'm like, but no, he's a slick grappler. That's for sure.
Yeah, and they think of the big right hand and the big belly too. But
see, that's why I think he likes me, you know, because I'm kind of got the big love handles and the hangy belly, so I think he knows where I'm coming from.
Yeah, nice brotherhood there. So you talked a little bit about how you're worried about the grappling game, but really a big part of your game is the ground and pound. You know, both of your fights, you know, you almost finished Roach out there with some ground and pound from Mount, and you did finish up Durek Imov from Mount. With it being a fight against a much better grappler than those two, is that still the game plan you look at going in, or you got a few tricks up your sleeves for us?
It is. It's just kind of maintaining myself, my posture and positioning. Don't get lazy. Don't make stupid mistakes. You know, that stupid mistakes definitely cost that fight against Rose Hall, in my opinion. I made a lot of mental errors there that cost that fight to go definitely his way. For me, I guess, in a situation that we take down, hit the mat, if I'm not liking, my position of it, I'm thinking it's just going to be wise just to break contact, stand back up, and start over from square one.
Switching off fight talk for a second, Tim, I'm not sure if you've heard this before. There's a corner of the internet, and I might be a part of it, that feels you look exactly like the German airplane mechanic in Raiders of the Lost Ark that Indiana Jones gets in a fist fight with.
Yeah,
are you familiar with this?
I know exactly. Yep, and then he pushes him into the propeller.
Correct. Classic scene in movie history. So you're familiar with this. I'm not the first person to bring this up.
Yep, I'm familiar with it.
Okay, cool. So, you know, I was thinking about this, and it's like, it's so tough. The UFC has 500 fighters on their roster, or whatever it is, to get noticed. You're an up-and-coming fighter. You got the stash, which is awesome. It's like, Aljamain Sterling, he has the gold chain and the flat top. I feel like your thing, you could be the new era Don Fry. Have you thought of this at all?
Oh, yes, yes, definitely thought about it. And actually, the mustache just came about by kind of accident. Every fighter, generally has their thing. I've always liked to have some sort of facial hair for all my fights, but usually I was able to get some kind of beards going. But I'm also in the Minnesota National Guard, so I have drill once a month. So sometimes I can only get I'll have a drill the weekend before a fight, where I'll have to shave, and the only facial hair that you're allowed in the military is a mustache, so that's how I had to keep it.
And it's like that in regs mustache too. That's like just
that's a gray area. We won't get into regs.
Awesome. So I just was curious. So we've got all of those really really interesting facial hair examples there. Where do you think your mustache ranks in the history of gray MMA facial hair?
I mean, there's
top
Fry.
Top 20%.
Only top 20%?
I mean, there's some monster mustaches out there that I can't compete with.
Uncle Creepy has, like, the weird twirl at the end. Severin had a good one, yeah.
Is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to that's helped you along during this fight camp, or any sponsors that have helped keep you afloat?
Sponsors? Huh, what are those? No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks, Reebok.
Just my general team, like you said earlier, heavyweights are kind of hard to come by, but in our gym here, there's there's four guys over 215 pounds, two guys over 280 pounds that are always in there day in, day out with me, and, all I do is all of them just cycle in on me every round. So there's a fresh guy coming in on me, and it just makes me feel like a pile of crap. But I know it's for the best.
Awesome.
Those guys at the gym here, we're up in Fargo, the Academy of Combat Arts, which has produced, I'm the fourth guy out of the gym who's fought under the UFC banner. So, I mean, you got to do it up the right. Just got to make. Don't have all the numbers with the bigger gyms, I guess.
Well, Tim, listen, we can't thank you enough for the time. We are big Timothy Johnson fans. We will be rooting for you in your next fight, and we thank you so much for coming on with us today.
No, that's awesome. Thanks for having me.
So there you have it. That's our interview with Tim Johnson. And I got to tell you, Dave, I think he's selling his mustache short. I think it's better than top 20%.
He was being humble. He was being humble. He's got an awesome mustache, especially for the new generation. I think he could be the Don Fry mustache of our generation.
Yeah, and that easily puts him in the top 5%. He was saying percent, too. He could be top 20 all time.
All right, so with that being said, we broke down the main card for fight night on
Saturday.
God, I am
in London.
I get hit in the head way too much on Fight Pass. And now we'll go with the rest of the undercard. You have Mike Wilkinson, local fighter out of Manchester, fighting again. I apologize on the name. Makwan Amerikani.
No, you nailed that one. Makwan Amerikani.
Amerikani is 2-0 in the UFC. Submission over Massio Fullen and a KO over Andy Ogle. Mike Wilkinson is 2-1 himself. Nicholas Backstrom, he knocked out in round one back in October. Lost to Ronny Jason and beat Brandon Longhain. How do you see this one playing out, Gumby?
I can't lie about this. Heading into this breakdown, huge bias. I'm a giant Makwan Amerikani fan.
He is the -195 favorite. Mike Wilkinson, the +160.
And in addition to being the favorite and having some really good finishes on his resume, God, I just hope he wins so we can hear the interview again. For those of you who don't remember, he's the one who told Joe Rogan that he grew up watching Fear Factor.
Oh, that was him?
Yeah, that's him.
I love that dude.
Yeah, exactly. Grew up watching Fear Factor, and he just like hugged it out with Joe Rogan because that was his lifelong dream.
All right, so now we're just hoping he wins just for the post-fight.
Just for the post-fight. But in addition to that, I mean, he is a very well-seasoned submission specialist. If he gets Mike Wilkinson anywhere near the ground, this is going to be a submission. I think Wilkinson is going to try to keep it standing. And even if he can keep it standing, I think it's a competitive fight, which is why Amir Akani is such a favorite, is it's like a 50-50 toss-up on the feet, and it's like not even close on the ground, in my opinion.
All right. Well, moving from the featherweights, we'll go to the bantamweights. You have Davy Grant out of Great Britain as well. He has one loss in the UFC to Chris Holdsworth, a submission. He will be fighting Marlon Vera, who is 1-1 in the UFC, coming off a win, submission in the second over Roman Salazar. How do you see this one going down?
So Vera is one of those tough Mexico or tough Latin America guys, right? And I don't know if you guys saw that show. Is he one of those guys?
I could check that right now. He's from Ecuador, so there's a pretty good chance.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. And maybe I'm just generalizing here, but in general, I haven't liked, with the exception of Yair Rodriguez, what I've seen out of that show. I mean, Davy Grant, not a killer either. But I think his wrestling would probably do the trick here.
He was correct. Sorry to interrupt. He was on Ultimate Fighter Latin America.
Yeah, and not terribly impressive. Like I watched most of the fights on that show. I didn't watch the show because, you know, obviously the language throws me off a little bit. But, you know, I just overall underwhelmed by that show. I tend to lean against anybody who was on it. Davy Grant, like I said, has some wrestling, throws some hands. I'm going to call decision here and probably just give it to Grant. I'd stay away from this one if you're betting, though, because it neither of them have looked all too sharp in the UFC.
Davy Grant, a -180 favorite. Marlon Vera, +150. But, you know, that's not saying a lot. Like you said, we don't have a lot to go off of. Neither have looked very impressive. And Vegas gets this kind of stuff wrong all the time.
Yeah, you got to get some dogs in there anyway.
Right. So, okay, moving on. Going from the bantamweight division, we will move to the middleweight division. And Scott Askham. Askham what? Okay, I'm here all night, sorry. He will be fighting Chris Dempsey, Gumby. Dempsey is 1-2 in his last three fights, coming off a knockout loss to Jonathan Wilson. And Askham what? Is coming off a loss to Christoph Jocko, a split decision loss, but he is 1-2 in his last three. What are your thoughts on this fight?
I'm thinking this is a loser leaves town match, and it's weird too to say that because when Dempsey came in, I was the one saying Chris Dempsey is one to look out for. I really liked him as a future prospect, and he's just kind of underwhelmed. I think everywhere I thought he was good for like the promotions he was fighting in when I was watching him in the minor leagues. I think Askham is actually a better prospect here now at this point. I actually had him winning that Jocko fight. And you know, maybe I was in the minority on that one, but it was a split. I think that this is probably his fight to lose. Again, you're probably going to see knock him down, drag him out, three-round decision here. Because both of them, not a ton of finishing ability, but I do see Askham getting the win here.
All right, and then moving on to the featherweight division, we have Arnold Allen, 1-0 in the UFC, beat Alan Omer, and he is going to be fighting MMA Lab's own Yautsen Meza. Meza coming off a decision loss to Sam Cecilia. He is 1-2 in his last three in the UFC. Your thoughts, Gumby?
So Yautsen Meza, you know, lab guy. We just talked about how much we like the lab and how they've all been great to us. Crouch coming on the show, Murphy coming on the show. I'm going to have to betray our Arizona fight camp here because I said before, if Tom Breese is the best chance at Britain getting a prospect of the title, Arnold Allen is close behind that. You know, Arnold Allen is amazing at 22 years old. He has got crazy, crazy, crazy power.
Crazy power at featherweight, you say?
Yeah, really, really, really surprising. But that last knockout showed me that he's the real deal. And I'm pretty sure the kid's only like 22 years old, too.
That is correct. He was a 1994 baby.
Yeah, Jesus. Wow, if that doesn't make you feel old. But really, really young guy and lots of power, lots of speed. And Meza is a very gritty veteran. And it's the kind of step up Arnold Allen needed to start moving up towards the top of the division. They're moving him up way faster than they move Sage Northcutt, but I think he's way better equipped to move up fast.
All right, very interesting. That'll be something to watch on Saturday. As far as the betting lines go, Arnold Allen, the -325 favorite. Yautsen Meza, the veteran, +250. Moving on in the fight card, you have Bradley Scott. This is at middleweight, Gumby. Bradley Scott will be fighting, and I'm going to mess this up, Christoph Jotko. No, I guess I got that. Christoph Jotko. Christoph Jotko is 2-1 in his last three. He's coming off a win over our pal Scott Askham. Askham what? It was a decision win. And Bradley Scott, Gumby, is coming off a win over Dylan Andrews. He's 2-2 in the UFC. 2-1 in his last three. How do you see this one playing out?
So I'm giving a little bit of redemption to the lab because Bradley Scott, lab guy. I like Allen in this one. I think he's a powerful guy. Probably not going to finish Jocko because Jocko's got a hell of a chin.
Wait,
on
you,
him.
You like Bradley Scott
I
in
like
this one?
Bradley Scott in this one. Okay. Yeah, because he's a lab guy. Even though he trains out of England too, I know he does time at the lab. Jocko's got a really tough chin on him. He's got that big polished chin on him. Tough to knock out. But, I mean, he beat Dylan Andrews. Dylan Andrews, for those of you who don't remember him, guy off the Ultimate Fighter, Australian as well, really tough to finish. And Bradley Scott put in a hell of a performance against him. If he comes out like that, he'll definitely beat Jocko.
All right, there you have it. Moving on into the lightweight division, you have Storman, Norman Park, the Irish fighter, fighting Rustam Khabilov. Khabilov is coming off two losses in a row to Adrian Martins and Benson Henderson. He's 1-2 in his last three. And Storman, Norman just beat Reza Madadi, decision win, but he's 1-2 in his last three. Both fighters kind of having bumpy patches here over the past couple of fights. How do you see this one playing out?
It's weird that they're both on bumpy patches, too, because they were both on such roles for so long. I think Park had four or five in a row. I know Khabilov had worked his way to a main event.
Yeah, three in a row and then got a main event with Benson Henderson.
Yeah, crazy that they've both fallen such way. But I think Rustam Khabilov is the anti-Norman Park. I mean, Park just wants to out-wrestle you and work from the top constantly. And Khabilov's sambo is incredible. That suplex knockout that he's got, I'm trying to remember. Is it Vince Pichel?
I think he knocked out Vince from Hell Pichel.
Yeah, and yep. He knocked him out with the crazy suplex.
Fighter 16 finale.
Yeah, there's no way that Park can stop that. And there's no way Park's going to take him down. And Park is not going to outstrike him. This is Khabilov all day.
All right. Moving on to the heavyweights, you have, I might mispronounce this, Daniel Omielczuk from Warsaw, Poland. He is 1-2 in his last three. He will be fighting newcomer Jarjus Dano. Gumby, tell us something about Jarjus.
I wish I could, but he's a Danish fighter. And that being said, not a whole... I mean, Danish, right, from Denmark?
I don't even have that.
Yeah, okay.
His nickname's Man Mountain, that counts.
I'm pretty sure he's from Denmark, and if you look that up, I'm pretty sure you'll find that. Not a whole lot out of Denmark as far as fighters go. I've tried to find a little bit of film on him. All that I tend to hear is that he's got punching power, and that's pretty much it. And I mean, that's the MO on every single heavyweight in history, right? That he's got punching power.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6-0. I'm seeing him as out of the Syrian Arab Republic, but that doesn't mean that. Yeah, he's on Hammer's team, which is I want to say, where is that out of?
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but Omielczuk here, he's got a more well-rounded game, I believe, than this Donald guy. And I think that that'll probably lead him to victory. Omielczuk has put in some pretty decent performances if you've watched him in the past. You know, they just haven't gone his way one way or another. He knows he's probably fighting for his job, and I think you see him bust out all the stops to keep it.
Yeah, and just to confirm here, the Hammers team, where he fights out of, is out of Denmark.
Okay, so I did have that right.
Yeah, yeah, that right.
Little bit of background there.
Unless I'm reading this wrong. But anyway, we'll believe you for now. I think you're right. So that was a heavyweight offering. We'll move to lightweight. You have Timu Pakalan versus Theobald Gauti. Pakalan is from Finland. He is coming off a loss Decision loss to Mikhail Labout, and Gaethje is making his UFC debut. I dare you to tell us something about these two fighters.
Okay, so I actually have something to say about Paglin, because he fought Labout, or however you say it, it's French, Mikhail Labout, and Labout, I don't speak a bit of French, but Labout is a really legitimate prospect. He's like a big muscly guy, and Paglin has got a really sharp submission game, and I actually thought that he had a chance to tap out Labout in a couple of positions if he had worked his way there. He just didn't wind up working to the right spots, and I think he's probably got the advantage here over Gaethje. Gaethje, kind of like Dono, signed into the UFC almost looking to, I think, bring in more European talent, and I just don't think probably UFC caliber yet, and I think Paglin's going to expose that. You'll probably see a submission here, if I had to guess.
So the only thing I'll say is two sports books are offering odds on this fight. Paglin is a +110 dog and a +114 dog, and Gaethje a -140 favorite and a -136 favorite.
That's pretty surprising to me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, but they might, you know, we're really stretching the bounds here with these European undercards, so I don't even think Vegas really has a great leg up on what's exactly
going on. Yeah, and I think that's probably because, like, these guys are getting signed. Like I said, I think they're stretching for European talent, and they're probably not quite ready.
All right, and last fight we will break down is David Tamor versus Martin Svensson from Sweden, both making their UFC debut. I dare you to tell us something about this. They're both lightweights.
I got it. So they're both off of the McGregor-Faber series.
Both
Team McGregor guys.
Svensson, I remember him. I don't remember Tamor.
Yeah, I don't remember too much about Tamor either. I think he's one of those guys who kind of got swept under the rug we didn't see too much about. Svensson's got a good submission game. You might remember seeing highlight clips of him training with the guys who are still in for submission games. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure he's the one who helped Sal Rogers work through the Ryan Hall game plan.
Okay.
So a really good submission game again. So I think, again, one of those things you're going to see on this early card is I think Svensson coming out probably going to submit Tamer. And I think that this one is going to be much more fun than some of those other early card bouts. It's not going to be a boring back and forth decision. It's going to be very quick, very fast, and very fun to watch.
All right. And in the two sports books offering odds on this fight, Tamor is the -130 favorite and Martin Svensson the +105 to +109 dog.
And like we talked about a little bit here, I don't think Vegas has too good of a beat on these fights. And I think that if you do a little bit of your own background homework here, these are some great fights to like steal some odds on. Do a little bit of watching of a video. You know, it only takes 2 seconds to watch a video on Svensson, and you could know that you're about to fool Vegas a little bit on these odds.
All right, I like it. So there you have it. There's the Fight Night 84 breakdown for you. The only thing I'll say as we wrap up here, Gumby, is I have actually, you know, Kevin Randleman unfortunately passed away way too soon last week, and it just kind of got me in a bit of a old school pride kick on Fight Pass. I went back and I started watching Pride 1, and I'm going to watch it all in a row. I haven't watched them really since college, some of those early ones.
Yeah, I haven't watched Pride in a long time. Even though I know it's there, I was like, oh yeah, they got Pride on Fight Pass, and then I was like,
I was the same way.
I'll watch it later.
You know what it is? I'll watch a fight, but I'm not going to go back and watch a whole show. I mean,
who's got the time for that?
Who's got the time for that? But I'm trying to like make a habit of it, and it's been really fun to go back and watch. But here's what it made me realize. Well, one, my wife and I now have a new game to play, which is spot the work in a pride fight. And we found one in the first three we watched over the weekend. We found one worked fight.
You just pointed that one out to me while we were watching a video before we started taping.
Pride 3, Takata versus, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was one.
Sturgis? Was it Sturgis? Something Sturgeon?
Dan Sturgeon or
the
something?
The Surgeon Sturgeon?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a kickboxer, one MMA fight, and it is an obvious work.
I think even Boss is in on it too, because he gets the kickboxer hits him in the head once, and he like goes, "Oh, but he can take that," and he like stands back up triumphantly.
He was selling it like professional wrestling. I mean, even like Sure Dog, there's another Takata fight where they don't even recognize the result because it was so obviously a work. And the other, anything Takata's in, other than Hickson armbarring the shit out of him, anything Takata's in, you have to question. So just to give a little background, There was a professional wrestler, Anjo was his last name, who in 1992, for whatever stupid reason, flew into LA, I think it was, or it might have been Brazil, but bottom line is he flew in and challenged Hickson to a fight, a real fight. He called him up at the dojo. Hickson came down, went in the back room. Hickson beat the shit out of this guy, and there's tape of it, and people have seen it. And then based off of that feud, the professional wrestler, you know, sent him a bouquet of flowers, some sort of Japanese samurai ritual for saying, yeah, you got me, dog. But then based off that feud, his buddy Takada, who was one of the founders of Pride, said, hey, I'll fight you, Hickson, for real in an MMA fight. And that was Pride 1. It was the Stone Cold Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan of the day for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Takada versus Hickson Gracie. Hickson beat the crap out of him, armbarred him in 2 minutes. But anything not Hickson Gracie that Takada's in is a work. Mark Coleman basically admitted that he threw a fight against Takada because the Yakuza offered him money. And the thing that just I wanted to kind of bring up is for all the people who are so mad about the UFC and CM Punk, you know, professional wrestling, the roots lie deep in MMA. There would be no Pride if there was no Takada, if there was no professional wrestling in Japan. So, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm happy with the CM Punk signing. I think it's kind of BS, but it's been done before.
Yeah, and well, there's more ties there, too. And you know, I don't really like the ties anymore because I am one of those MMA purist guys. I grew up watching professional wrestling. I've moved away from it. I don't watch a single bit of it anymore. When they signed CM Punk, I'm one of those angry, bitter people who you're talking about. But in the same token, you're right. There are a lot of ties there still. Matt Riddle left MMA to go do pro wrestling again. Josh Barnett, I know, announces some pro wrestling still.
Josh Barnett, yeah, trains pro wrestlers, announces pro wrestlers. And then you even have, I think Tom Lawler is doing some professional wrestling too.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It's an easy kind of segue between the two, I guess you could say. I'm still like shocked with Sakuraba. He was a great pro wrestler who turned MMA in the mid-90s, and he is an awesome grappler.
Yeah, he had to have been doing something before than just pro wrestling training, because like I mean, it's there, but it's there's so much more than that to his game. There's no way he picked it up right then and was that much of a natural.
Anyway, it's just, you know, we'll do a separate show on this, maybe like a retrospective on Pride and everything it means, but I just going back and watching those shows from the jump, I was just reminded of how much theatrics were involved in Pride. And yeah, it has some of the most awesome knockouts of all time, and it created legends. And I'm not saying any of those fights were works. I just think when you watch Pride, it's just funny to go back. You know, even the Sakuraba versus Carlos Newton match, I was just making you watch it before we got on the show. They obviously said to themselves, yeah, we're not really going to punch each other. Let's just go out and have a grappling match.
Yeah, maybe I had never seen that before you showed it to me. I feel like I should have at some point in time, but I was watching it and it's downright bizarre. Like he's like in a postured up guard and he's doing nothing.
No hammer fist.
Yeah,
no,
he's
nothing.
Trying to pry his legs off of him to pass guard. And you're like, that's what I do when I'm training Nogi. Like,
I mean, they certainly, there have been stand-up fighters who've probably said to each other in the back, hey man, I won't take you down. You don't take me down. Let's just go out on our swords here. And I guess that's kind of what two grapplers just said to themselves, like, hey, don't punch me in the face. Let's just grapple this.
Could you imagine that in this day and age, how pissed the fans would be?
Exactly. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring up. I didn't really have a main point to this other than to say like, yeah, you know, the CM Punk thing, it is what it is, but you know, the sport has come a really long way. And I guess that's almost to the point that they didn't need to go sign CM Punk. They could have kept it pure. They could have made it more of a sport, but I get it. Bellator was on their heels. They didn't want to let him go there. But if you ever want to look to the past and look to history, and this is something we'll have to have, you know, a Keurig Jeunesse on, or maybe if we could ever get a Dave Meltzer on to talk about it. But the roots run deep with fixes, with pro wrestling, and with theatrics.
Yeah. And it almost makes you take into perspective what Wanderlei Silva said about the UFC fixing matches, because like it's so obvious that the UFC isn't, and if they are, God, the quality's so much better than Pride.
It is. Yeah, they're doing a much better
job.
And
I'm not saying they are. No. I'm joking. They're not. It's clearly not.
No, they're not.
And Wanderlei Silva's a joke for suggesting
and,
that.
And, you know, listen, Mark Coleman did throw a fight in Pride, but again, there was Yakuza involvement and all sorts of other shady stuff. So it is what it is.
Unless you think the Culinary Union is doing that, I think we're fine.
You never know. All right, so next week we're back, Gumby. It's going to be an awesome show because we will be breaking down McGregor versus Dos Anjos.
Yeah, and I think that's a show that you gotta tune in for. The preview for that, the hype, it's just so great. And we're gonna be breaking it down And we're going to have lots of stuff for you. So make sure that you tune in next week and hear that on Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, on MMA-Manifesto.com. Whatever it is you use to get a hold of us, make sure that you tune in next week, too.
All right. Well, when you get to the top turtle position in MMA, you should always be looking to finish. We are top turtle. We are finished.